I'm hoping this works. I'm not in my normal place where I record a podcast at or do interviews at. I usually do those at my desk. I have this really nice system set up where the acoustics are good, and or in a studio. This is just going to be me and my phone right now. I wanted to address the elephant in the room, you know. People ask me why I haven't done a podcast in the past few months, at least. And yes, much of it is because of my uncle battling cancer. We just found out, in fact, the day I'm going to mention on this, that his cancer is, in fact, terminal. So he started chemo yesterday, and that's been a big part of this year, just taking all the energy out of me. And, you know, I know a lot of my people in here are atheists. I really respect that. I respect anybody's beliefs. Me, I don't know what I believe. I kind of believe in the universe. I ask everybody to, in whatever way you believe, you know, pray for them and hope for a miracle. Hope for a miracle for all these different causes that I take part in helping people with and daily giving those affirmations of love and kindness and loving awareness to everybody. It's really important. You don't know with some of these people are bedridden, having a bad moment. They may seem very, very strong to you, but I know from situations dealing with people like my dad and my older brother and my uncles and other people that it really means a lot when you take the time to send your love and prayers and kindness and just acknowledge their existence and what they're going through, and reach out to whatever higher power you believe in and wish them healing and let it go from there. So that's very important. But the elephant in the room, why have I not been doing podcasts? Well, I've had some issue with a person that's been very scary to me. I'm not afraid to admit that. I've been terrified. You know, I've been spending the whole summer. Normally, I'm able to be like I've been for years, able to sit out in my yard on my swing or at the tree line or, you know, whatever, and felt that I had this freedom, that it was a sanctuary to me, that I could be there, right, and feel at peace. But I have not had that opportunity this year. I've been basically finding ways to be on edge, to hide from people. And with the car trouble I've had this year, still in car trouble, I'm not able to travel all the way I wish I could and on my own, had been. So, that being said, I wanted to address the situation because I really have an opportunity to try to change it a little bit and to make it more convenient, congenial to myself, and go from there. And the point where I could very easily try and change the outcome of this, but I really do not have the resources. So anyhow, like, I'm trying to be very much, what am I doing here? Very much safe and feel safe in my environment. And it's just not been that way. I've lived in the same area for, it's a generational homestead. So it's been in my family. And I love it here. You know, when I first moved in here, there were older people. I've mentioned Tom Creed across the street. I've mentioned Chuck Bishop. I've mentioned Rose Shari. All these people that were older than me. And they're very accepting. And I was the younger person around. And I, at my time, maybe I'm weird. Maybe it's being an artist. Maybe it's the history in me that I love history. I spent time to talk to these people. And I would spend more time talking to these older people as a kid than I could ever imagine. Even looking further back, I remember being a little kid and sitting at the feet under the table, listening to the adults talk and just understanding what they were saying and really respecting that. I think there's a certain level of respect. So I've spent many years here, and I've felt that, you know, as these people have slowly, one by one, have passed away, and it's touched me in deep ways, that the new people that come in, I have an obligation to be kind to them and try to be friendly. You know, I don't toot my own horn. I don't go and say, even now, like, I'm an author, I've been a 9/11 ambassador, I've been a minister, I've been a lot of things. I worked this job that I work trying to help educated youth for 20 years, and it's a very powerful, meaningful job to me. None of that makes me better than anybody else or less than anybody else. And I've always tried to go through life with a, you know, sense of humor. You know, it's a sense of humor, and when you see somebody down, you kind of feel bad for them and you try to help them out. And that's what communities do. You know, I always try to keep that communal side, and it's always apart from my side as an author. But I think it's true what the Bible says when they say that, and not a prophet, but the Bible says that no prophet is welcome in their own hometown. This is by no means my hometown. My hometown is Somerset, Pennsylvania. But I've lived here long enough to where it has a deep-seated meaning to me. And being that I'm either working or I'm out of town or I'm everywhere, I don't get around here too often. And, you know, I don't know if people don't know me. They don't know that I'm a writer. I've a lot of my books are sold lately in Tokyo and Europe, and I talk to people all over the world. I through my publisher, I know that, you know, I've done good of book signings, and there's people that are touched deeply by my book that I've never met in my life, and for some reason, something I've written resonates with them in a way that they felt the same thing. And, you know, I'm not by any means considering myself this vastly an original thought, but that, you know, you're a conduit of some kind of goodness in the universe, that, you know, you are tapping into something that's kindness, love, and loving awareness. So when something slaps you in the face like I've had this year, It just throws you for a loop. It really throws you for a loop. And I want to go into it. I'm not going to mention names. I'm not going to mention a lot of the details. I want to talk about basically the corruption. The corruption in Western Pennsylvania, not politically, not necessarily anything other than the way people treat one another and the authorities and different things of that nature. How people will lie. I really don't know where to start with this story. I guess I should go back to when this neighbor of mine moved in. He moved in, and I looked, and I saw the girl he was dating, and I knew her since we were small children. It was really odd that he'd be dating her, and that was one of the coolest things in the world. I thought, this is going to be great. These are my childhood friends, and I was so excited for this, and for a few months, it was magical. It was totally magical to have these people around me and to reconnect with my old childhood friend. But slowly over time, I saw that how abusive this individual was to my friend and her daughter. I won't go into details about it, but I was put in an awkward situation. Someone later said to me, you know, it's like being in the military. The military teaches you to go beyond your boundaries. And I think in the process of trying to be a neighbor, trying to be a friend, trying to be friends with both people, I went beyond my boundaries in a lot of ways and accepted things I shouldn't have until it slapped me in the face that, hey, this isn't right. The person wanted out of the situation, and I'm obligated under law as a court-mandated reporter to help them out, and I did. I did everything in my power to be, without getting vastly involved, to help the person out. and her daughter to get away from this abusive situation and on to a better life, you know. And still remain friends with both, trying to. Well, that didn't always go the way I wished. And apparently, you know, people hold grudges for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't know the situation. I will not try to get into the person's mind. But recently, he started dating another person who, with their dogs, would just be very loud and any way to try to tell me that I could not be on my own property, okay? Very bizarre to me. At first, I kind of laughed it off as being, well, that's just people being people. And then I started to feel that, like my friend Cage, who is a musician, said, he's a Native American, he said, you know, brother, maybe a lot of this is about being part Ukrainian and part Native American. There's racism involved. There's deep-seated racism in this area. And I can't deny it. I saw it and I felt it. And it kind of got to the head where I just finally turned around one day and said, hey, you just leave me alone. Will you just go away? Will you just leave me be? I'm dealing with my uncle having cancer. And I really feel that you're not helping. Could you please just not bother me? And these people wanted to put some kind of a driveway in. And my property had been surveyed back in 1996. So I went out. They were going to go many feet over onto my property. And they had just built over onto my property. And I never cared much. But I said, well, you know, if you're going to be building this driveway and excavating, I'll show you where the property pegs are. And I did. And when I did, my God, I got called every name in the book, asked if maybe the property pegs weren't real, and there was this assumption that maybe that I made it up, you know, or I had documentation. It was surveyed on this date. Here's the survey markers. Here's the latitude and longitude, everything. And I just had this moment where I'm staring at them and I'm thinking, this is not going to de-escalate in a way that is conducive to what I would like it to be. So I said to myself, well, the only way to deal with this and to try to de-escalate the situation is to go down and see what it would be to put up a fence and, you know, see what the regulations are. And I got the paperwork and it said, okay, this, 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 and this. It's all state law. It's BOCA laws, building code permit laws. And among them is to take the pegs and paint them. You put a rope in between them. And you're going to go every 8 feet with a post because the panels are 8 feet. So what you want to do is you kind of want to go 8 feet. And then when you put them in, you want to go on centers. So your first one is not going to be 8 feet. It's going to be from the edge of the panel in, which is going to give you about another 3 inches. So I'm planning all this out. And I got marking paint and I painted the pegs for the survey pegs. And I was sitting out in my yard in the sun, nice day, and I've been avoiding these people for what seems to be like weeks. And I'm going to put this fence up. It's going to be all nice and quiet. And these two individuals start screaming at me, and I'm just there, and I'm ignoring them. And he says to me, look, he says, you are going to talk to me man to man. And he's holding a gun in his hand. So obviously I have a little bit more desire to speak to someone if they have a gun. And I said, okay, what do you want to talk about? And he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to put up a fence. I'm sick of this. I said, I'm not going to be intimidated by you. You think because I'm a famous writer that I'm, and I work the elections and all these things I do, that you're not upsetting me? You are upsetting me. And I said, I'm not going to tolerate this. This reminds me of high school bullying. And I said, nobody else in this town would tolerate the way that you're treating me. You're just doing this knowing you can get away with it because I won't react. And I left it at that. You know, I mentioned about how he treated the girl that he had dated before. And I said, you know, I really do not consider you a person that I want to associate with. In a roundabout way. I did not know at this time this person had put up recording devices and all this other stuff. And would use this as an opportunity to try and play a little game on his point, on his part. So I go and I felt it was weird. And I thought, you know, I'm going to get this fence up as soon as I can. So I walked up the street. There's a lot of people I do know to get along with. And for 15 minutes, I'm up the street and I am talking to an individual about this. And my phone is ringing like 8 times a minute. And I'm thinking, well, it's him having someone call me. It's coming up as unknown name, unknown number. I know you can do like a star, whatever, and you can do that. So I didn't answer it. I didn't answer the phone. You know, at this point, I'm de-escalating as much as I can. I'm getting away from it. I'm trained in de-escalation. Is it always the most manliest thing to do? No. Walking away from a very aggressive individual with a gun on your property is probably not something I'd like to do. At that point, I obviously should have called the police, but he called the police. So that's what it was the police were called. And I wasn't home. And I get this voicemail. I get this voicemail from this state trooper that says that I'm hiding in my house. And I was like, what? What? Understand, I'm somebody that's been, I've worked the elections. I've been a 9/11 ambassador. I'm a world-known author. I travel. I meet all kinds of people all over the country. I don't travel around the world too much, but I send books out to people and sign. I have no criminal record. Never been pulled over. Nothing. And I just am in shock at how I'm being treated. So they came by later on and they asked me, what are you doing here? There's two officers. And his original thing was his spotlight up through the yard. He's like, you know, are you so-and-so? And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I want to be killed right here. This is just everything I've ever seen on television. Don't know what the story is. I don't know why they're doing this. There's obviously a certain amount of race to it. You know, like my friend Cage said about being Native American, I got the long hair. I don't look very white, okay? And all these things go through your head. So I said, well, okay, come up through the yard. And I showed him where I was painting these property pegs. And I said, you know, they build over across the line. I've had these people, for whatever reason, have decided to cause problems. And he was going to get me with disorderly conduct. He was going to get me with vandalism and harassment. I'm like, harassment? Vandalism? Disorderly conduct for painting my own property peg. Okay. At this point, it's very clear to me that I'm alone. I was right there in my mind. I thought of a situation where Bob Dylan was in Pittsburgh a few years ago, and he's walking down the street. And he doesn't have his ID on him because he's Bob Dylan. And they tried picking him up for vagrancy because these cops did not know who Bob Dylan was. I'm not on Bob Dylan's level, but that kind of craziness just happens. And I thought, okay. So I looked at the guy and I said, well, I never said anything to him. And I said, I do podcasts. I do all kinds of things. And I know in Pennsylvania, anytime you interview somebody, you have to have permission to record any conversation. So if this gentleman recorded anything, it's a felony, and I stated the law. And the officer said, there's no such law. And I said, yes, there is. So he accused me of being drunk, and I'm like, I'm not even drinking. I have to actually go to work tonight. I left to go. So I didn't think much of it. I'm still dealing with all this. My uncle, I continued to put the fence up, and it was at peace for months. The whole time I'm keeping quiet on this and feeling that, you know, this is going to blow over. I've spent the money on the fence, which was a considerable amount of money. And I'm doing the stuff I do with my life, which is writing and traveling and trying to get this car of mine to work. I've been having problems with. And the day of the hearing comes up, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to this hearing, and this is going to be dropped. I have the law here. I have all these messages these people have sent me on social media every time I block them, all the threats on my life, all this weird stuff. I go in, and it's not about that. It's about that exact situation. I'm not allowed to talk. No, I'm nothing against this judge. This judge is somebody that I have a lot of respect for, okay? People get things wrong. People do. I am not in any way saying anything bad about this person. I actually think very highly of this person. When this person became a judge, I was excited because I know this is the one person, one of those people, that does rule with fairness. But in this particular instance, I couldn't talk about anything led up to the surveying, anything led up to the months of harassment by these people, the threats to my family, the threats to fans of mine, people, I don't like the word fans, but people that read my books, you name it. None of this. It was just about that situation where I said that I would not tolerate how they were harassing me. And they, of course, made it sound as if I had been harassing them. That's what you do. That's what people do in that scenario. They make the person they're harassing look like the bad guy. And I'm thinking, in the meantime, I've got months and months of these people doing this to me. I'm a well-known author, all that stuff. I'm gonna go through my accomplishments in life, but I'm not like somebody that just fell off a turnip truck. Okay, so I go through this, and they bring up this tape they had, and I said, well, "Whoa!" I said, "This is a felony." I showed them the law, and instead of seeing it as a felony, that's a crime being committed against me. As an author, I'm a person with name recognition, living at my home, having a guy come to my property line with a gun, videotaping me, making demands, threatening me. But none of that was able to be brought up because it wasn't about them, it was about me. So the judge was right. Yeah, this is not admissible. You need to go to the district attorney, and you need to file this and all that. And I was like, okay. So I'm thinking it's going to be thrown out, but they went directly on the officers. Oh, that couldn't be brought up because that was the officer's discretion whether or not that law existed or not. And I said, well, where's the evidence? Am I going to be able to see the evidence? Am I going to be able to get an attorney? None of that stuff was provided to me. Due process, Fourth Amendment. And they found me guilty on it because of the officer's report. It was a very small fine, but I've never had any fine in my life. I've never harassed anyone, and it upset me. It really upset me a lot because of the fact that I'm the one with name recognition being harassed. I mean, my life threatened, and the whole racial overtones of this individual that is very racist, has made racist comments, I'll put it that way. Weird. One of the weirdest things in my life. And right before I went in, I found out my uncle had terminal cancer, so I was not on my game. And one of the things that strikes me the most was this individual said on the stand that I have a big mouth. And I don't know if they meant my writing. I don't know if they meant the causes that I take part in standing up for people. I don't know if they meant my job or what, but that I have a big mouth and I need to put in my place. And I was just shocked. I was shocked that it was allowed to go on. Again, nothing against the judge. She, wonderful person. I will state that over and over again. But the level of corruption that the state police Well, I have done so many fundraisers for and helped out. Excuse me, treat me that way. Just really shocked me. It really shocked me. And got a little bit of taste about what everybody else is saying about, and it didn't feel very good. To know my life, which has been serving other people, is put into question by an individual that has a vendetta against me, doesn't like me for whatever reason, and wants my land. And another friend of mine laughed and said, well, how more Native American can you get? Like, you literally, they're taking your land. So that's what that's about. And it's more deep than that, but that's why I've been away. Now, they tell me I could appeal this. It's really not that big of a deal. But it's the principle of it. And to appeal it, I call up to the courthouse. And I get a voicemail for this woman. And she will not return my call. So I'm going to let it at that. It's something worth taking a stand on. Why is it worth taking a stand on? Because I want to illustrate this to show what people with name recognition go through, what writers go through, what journalists go through, what people of different races go through. All these things to where you're thrown into a situation where people do not know who you are, they do not recognize you, and they shouldn't have to. It shouldn't be that. It should be any American citizen or any person has basic human dignity and human rights. And my rights were seriously trampled on that day. I had every right in the world to put a fence up and to try and be as peaceful and calm and not deal with this person that has very violent tendencies towards me. So I want to leave it at that, and I'm hoping this person leaves me alone. They probably won't. But I'm leaving this as a record, too, because of the fact that should anything happen to me, 9 chances out of 10, it's probably going to be some of this person for whatever reason. I don't know what's in their heart. I've known them for many years, but we're never extremely close. We're friends in common, but small town stuff, you know. And I will try to get back on here. I've just been through a lot with my uncle, basically. And this here was just enough just to kind of limit my freedom of speech a little bit. I wanted to explain that to all of you why I've been away. And hopefully we can get back into this. Don't know how things will be with my uncle. It's terminal. I understand that. Been there with my dad and other people. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to do more things, do more podcasts, get some more people on here. I really appreciate all of you for listening to me, that do listen to me, that take the time out of your day, and like some of those old stories, you know. I want to thank the person who helped me get into this, who really inspired me to do a podcast, as well as what I've done with the written word and take it to this level, is Raylan Nelson. If you get a chance, listen to her podcast, Music is Funny, where she interviews comedians. She's taken a step away from Anchor and gotten into that, which is great that she can do it. You know, she's Willie Nelson's granddaughter and has a wonderful studio and YouTube. Check her out and be the light and love that you are in the world. Thank you.